2 Corinthians chapter 1. We've been talking about matters of the heart, and this morning we're going to talk about single-hearted and broken-hearted. Anybody know what happens later this week? Men, you should know this. What happens later this week? Valentine's Day. The ladies are having to help you, okay? Valentine's Day. When is it? Saturday. And what's the date? The 14th. Is it always the 14th? Yes, there you go, guys. You can put it in your little PDA, a repeating thing every year, okay, so you don't forget. Single-hearted and broken-hearted. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, starting in verse 3, says this. All praise to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. God is our merciful Father and the source of all comfort. He comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort others. When they are troubled, we will be able to give them the same comfort God has given us. For the more we suffer for Christ, the more God will shower us with his comfort through Christ. Even when we are weighed down with troubles, it is for your comfort and salvation. For when we ourselves are comforted, we will certainly comfort you. Then you can patiently endure the same things we suffer. We are confident that as you share in our sufferings, you will also share in the comfort that God gives us. I want to talk this week about single-hearted and broken-hearted. You know, in our society, we have this high level of focus on relationships. You can't stand at the grocery store and look in line at any magazine and get away with not seeing something about somebody's relationship. What is People Magazine usually about? It may be about a certain star, but it's usually about relationships, isn't it? I mean, TMZ is, you know, kind of the gossipville of TV, you know? What is that show usually about? It's usually about either a relationship a star is going into, currently in, or getting out of. That's usually what it's about. Hey, we caught so-and-so together. Do they have a relationship or not? And as Americans, we have so elevated in living into somebody else's relationship that we've elevated this status so much that the question that will happen this week for all of you singles, and we have quite a number of them here this morning, as we usually do, do you have a Valentine? You know, are you seeing anybody? And we've elevated to such a status that if you're not seeing somebody, something must be wrong with you. Surely you can find somebody. I mean, there's millions of singles, and you know. You just feel the pressure. It's just like, take anybody, you know, just so that you can say you had somebody. And we've elevated to such a status, this thing of having someone, that if you don't have someone, that there must be something wrong with you. And I want you to know at Gateway, I will never, ever see you as half of a person because you're single. But isn't that the way society kind of makes you feel? If you're single and you get in your 20s and then maybe you get in your 30s and it's like, oh man, I don't know, there must be some baggage. Hey, guess what? Everybody's got baggage. I'm a firm believer in it. Everybody needs counseling because everybody's got issues. It's just whether you're mature enough to see that you've got issues. Doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you a broken person. It makes you normal, not abnormal, normal. And we look at people and we think they've got it all together, and you know, we elevate them in society. Oh, look at who they're seeing, and oh, hey, they got issues. They've got issues. You lived with them long enough, you'd realize it. You'd have to come to grips with it. And I think one of the most liberating things is when you can come together as a community and no one sees dating couples or married couples as having a higher status than those who are singles. And I remember for a long time as a single, I was a single in my 30s, feeling like sometimes at church, this pressure of you're half a person. We need to fix you up with somebody. Now, I appreciated the fact that they were looking out for me. There was a certain part of their heart that was correct, but there was also a certain part that was kind of putting a lot of pressure to say, if you're not with somebody, there must be something wrong, and it is up to us, because you obviously cannot pull this off by yourself, that you need help. The worst thing that happened when I was in established churches that had grandmas, okay? I've got a granddaughter that you need to meet. Let me tell you something. I didn't meet one granddaughter that I felt like I needed to meet of theirs, okay? After I met them, I was like, I'm not quite sure that this is who I need to meet, sweetheart. I realize you're looking with rose-colored glasses at your granddaughter. She's really not that great, okay? You know, I mean, I don't know how to tell you that. You know, now, I didn't say that to them, but that's what I was thinking, all right? That's what I was thinking. And it sounds a little harsh, but it was reality. You've been that way too. I've got a friend that you need to meet. She's just the cutest little thing. And the whole time you're going, no. Ladies, same thing for you. Oh, he's just the greatest guy. If he's the greatest guy, why are you having to pawn him off? You know, have you ever thought that before? You know, why are you having to do a sales job on this thing, you know? But I want you to know that I don't want you to feel under compulsion, under pressure. I'm going to be all for you if you're in a relationship. I'm going to work to help you make that happen. But I'm not going to sell you a bill of goods to say, you know, you're half of a person. I want you to know God sees you as a full person and a whole person. You don't suddenly become whole when you get married. Matter of fact, you figure out how unwhole that you are. Because suddenly things, they begin to point out, you're like, no, I don't. I don't do that. You're crazy. No, they're not. They see reality. It's reality. And you deny it, but they know you best. They know when you get angry and, you know, in the old days, you could slam the phone down. You can't slam a cell phone down because then you break it and it's like $300, you know, if you don't have insurance, right? How do you hang up with somebody with authority anymore, man? Beep. You know, that's all you can do. In the good old days, man, you could go, ching! Remember those old phones, man? Those were the good old days. I'll show you how I feel. Bam! You can't do that with your cell phone. You need to borrow someone else's cell phone and then throw it, right? But you're not less of a person. I want you to know that my single days were nothing that I look back upon and go, oh, if I could just relive that. Oh, that was just great. Man, JP is right when he says, there is dating in hell, you know? He is absolutely correct. Because there's no commitment. You can't figure out what somebody else is doing. You're dressing in ways you've never dressed before, you know? You're holding doors open that you never held open before. I'm kidding, guys. You know, it's just awkward. It's just weird. You're wondering what the other person's thinking until one of these days you have these things called a DTR. Anybody knows what a DTR is? Determine the relationship, you know? You got to sit down and say, okay, you know, and you never have a good speech for it. You know, I was kind of feeling like, you know, maybe if you were and, you know, but you don't have to, you know, but I was kind of thinking that maybe the relationship, you know, might take up another step, but, you know, if you don't want to take that other step, then that's okay and it can be cool and everything else. But on the inside, you're going, that's not going to be cool. That's going to be awkward, okay? Because you're hanging yourself out there and then you get back the old, I just want us to be friends. Is there a guy on the planet that can handle just being friends once you've kind of had the romantic feelings? I mean, is there? I mean, maybe there is this guy, this superhuman guy that goes, sure, that's no problem. I'll take you out next week and we'll just forever be friends and I'll always feed you and take you out and do whatever you... No, man, that's just weird. And then the next time you see them, you're like, oh, man, I laid it all out there. And she probably told her friends, it was an icky moment, you know. Oh, I told him he wanted to be friends. And he said we could, but we all know it's not going to happen. But I want you to know that here at Gateway and the way that I view you is and the way God views you, it's you're a whole person, man. You don't suddenly become complete just because you say I do. Thus, the reason for a 50% divorce in America. You don't suddenly become complete on that day. And I know that we decorate the door, the wedding day, so much, and we never build the rest of the home. And if you really think about that metaphor, you realize that's what we do. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm from the South, and you probably picked up that when I want to say something sarcastic, I go Southern because it is funnier that way, and it really is. Sherry loves it when I do that. When something happens and I want to be sarcastic, man, I go totally Southern, and she laughs at that. In the South, man, we don't do weddings the way you all do weddings up here. Now, some of the elite do. Spending $30,000, $40,000 on a wedding? It was a shocker to me, man. Dude, we go down to Sam's Club. We get some mixed nuts. We throw that out there with a little bit of punch that we go, wow, dude, that's some great punch. What is in that? We get some chocolate cake for the groom's cake. We have a really nice wedding cake. We do that. And we rent the fellowship hall of the church, man, for about $500. We rent the church for about $500. If you want a sound engineer, that's about $250. If you want somebody to clean it up yourself or have somebody else clean it up, that's $250. If you want to do it yourself, okay, that's less. And that's the way that most of them are done, man. It's not because they're trying to be cheap. As much as it shocked me, Sherry was showing me her brother and sister-in-law's wedding when Sherry and I were getting more serious and was in shock. I was like, dude, Stacy's parents must be loaded. They're not. I was like, wow, Sherry, what does Stacy's parents do? She told me what he did, and I was like, whoa, they get paid that well up here? Man, this is the place to live. Little did I know, Cleveland was falling apart, you know? Had no clue. And I said, Sherry, this is amazing. She goes, that's just a normal wedding. I was like, oh, that's normal? This is normal? She goes, yeah. And I immediately thought in my mind, we're dressing up the door and we're not building the house. Because I'm sitting there thinking, dude, they need to invest $40,000 in counseling. I don't know them, but they're going to need it, man. Pastor Dan, you know this. They get all worried about the day. They spend a year, in some cases, working up on that day, man, and they spend the bucks. And then they come to us and they go, could you talk to me for like $50? Our marriage is falling apart. I'm like, no, I want that $40,000 if you want me to fix this thing. This is bad, dude. Dan knows what I'm talking about. And I never care because I want to help people. I want to see them do well. The issue's not money, but here's what I know. They paid all their money for the door. Got a beautiful door. Got great pictures, even video from different angles, you know? Wow, fading in and fading out. Wasn't it great that day? I want you to know, singles, and some of you young marrieds are probably nodding your heads. This is why I will do some premarital counseling, but where I know you need the help is 2 weeks after. Because he's not so great, ladies. She's not so wonderful. And while you may be brokenhearted as a single now, just marry the wrong person. While we've got a 50% divorce rate, I will tell you, you've got much less than that that are actually fulfilled. Because I will tell you, the goal of marriage is not to be happy. It's to make the other person fulfilled. And if you're getting married to be happy, get out before it's too late. I've had some people come to me before and say, I've been single for a long time. Maybe I've got too high of standards. And I say, well, what's your baseline? If your standard is certain kind of looks, and yes, I want you to be attracted to that person. But if it's about money, looks, and all that other stuff, or the way you feel, that is the wrong standard. What is your baseline for your standards? And I'll meet young ladies and young men who look at me and say, I just can't find the right person. I just keep meeting bad people. And I go, then maybe your baseline and your standard is wrong. Maybe you're not willing to hold out. And if you're not willing to hold out, God's not going to hold anybody up for you. If you're willing to settle, God's not going to save somebody back. And here's what I will also tell you. It is unbiblical to believe that everyone is going to be married because everyone won't. And that's why I say to you, I don't look at you and think, oh, they need to get married. because I already see you as a whole and complete person. And if God brings somebody along, man, we're going to rejoice with you. But don't settle. Don't settle. And ladies, remember this, you always get what you advertise for. Always. I had a young lady, it was one of the few young ladies that I ever had to approach in a youth group about the way she was dressing. Now then, I had hundreds and thousands of kids come up through youth ministry. Okay, this isn't, you know, when I say very rare, you know, I may have had three conversations in person. I may have usually dealt with it in a public thing and just say, hey, ladies, listen, watch what we're wearing. This one young lady, man, she was way out of bounds. And even the guys were coming to me going, could somebody talk with her? We'd had some of the ladies, usually what I did was, I didn't want to embarrass them as a youth pastor, so I would have our ladies in our church go and say, hey, you know, sweetheart, we need to really be careful with what we're wearing. I mean, this stuff was way out of bounds. And it's not like she was a guest. I didn't ever talk to guests about that. But this is a person that was in the church, grew up there, okay? She knows better. So I sat her down one time and I said, look, I said, could you be really, really careful and the way that you're dressing, and let's just be appropriate, and let's help guys in this area. And this is what she looked at me and said. I will never forget it. I can take you to the exact spot, man. She looked at me and she said, I can't help it. I just attract guys like flies. You know those moments that you say something that you look back on and you say, I think in my lifetime, if I died today, that was the best comeback ever? Immediately following her statement of, I can't help it, I just attract guys like flies, immediately what came out of my mouth was, you know something, sister, crap attracts flies. And I was like, wow. I look back upon that moment, and to this day, it was my greatest comeback ever. Because if you're going to get haughty and arrogant like that and not go, really, I would have never said that if she would have said, I don't understand. I would have tried to help her understand all those other things. But when you give, no. So ladies, here's what I would tell you. You get what you advertise for. Guys, if you don't have strong character, you get what you advertise for. And again, I can't promise to you that everybody's going to get married. That's not the way it's going to happen. But I can tell you this. I can guarantee you how to be miserable and still be married and be totally unfulfilled. Let's move on. If you're going to marry, marry with a mission. I'm not going to spend much time with this one. Marry with a mission. Does the other person make you a better person? If you can't answer that question, the affirmative, get out. When couples say to me, how do I know if it's right? Does the other person make you a better person? I'm not talking about if you have fights or arguments. Welcome to reality, okay? I'm talking about the fights and the arguments. What are they about? Are they about lowering standards or, you know, that sort of thing? Get out. Does the other person make you a better person? Next thing is this. Learn how to invest in their joy. This is what I'm talking about with, forget about, you know, happiness and blissfulness. There's going to be days like that, but then there's going to be a whole lot more days where it's just tough, man. And it's not so much inside pressure with the relationship, but outside pressure. Finances, jobs, kids on the way, right, Dan and Amanda, you know. You've already got three. Hey, we're having another, you know. Wow. Hey, man, there's pressure. Hey, we're going to go launch a church. And we don't have anybody to go with us. And we're going to have a baby at the same time. This ought to work out well, you know. Where's the money coming from? I don't know. Pressure. It's from outside, not from within. But man, you're talking about an incubator for arguments and dissension and trouble. There it is. But that pressure is from without. It's not a bad character issue from within. That's pressure from without. Invest in their joy. What I would tell guys, and I get like this, man, I have to watch myself a lot, quit building the rocket all the time. Okay, guys? What that means is sometimes you got to shut it down and shut it off, all right? You're not going to fix all the problems, all right? Shut it down, shut it off. Because here's what I know, you better make sure that your family's on board on that rocket, or you're taking off by yourself. And while you're having a great time with whatever you're building, okay, and whatever you're going to launch to do, you've embittered them towards you. That's why I've always believed that if I ever got to the point where I could see that a church situation, and if it was my fault or the church's fault, didn't really matter. My fault or the church's fault. If I could tell that it was going to embitter Sherry, and yes, she's responsible for her own bitterness, but I'm talking about it's just too much, and if it's going to cause Josiah to stumble and everything else, man, I'm out. I'm in the wrong place, wrong time. Whatever I'm doing is not correct. Either I've got to change some things, or the church's got to change, or both. And I am not sacrificing that. I've seen pastors do that before. And oh man, they build a great church, but their family is in shambles. And I'm not talking about their kids chose improperly, because ultimately it's up to their decision-making ability if they're going to choose the right way. But I've seen the church so dominate a pastor, and he's allowed it to get to that point that he's always had to come home and apologize to his son or daughter as to why he missed something of value to them. You've got to draw the line. I have to draw it. You have to draw it in your own life. You know, Isaiah 61:1 is what Jesus quoted as his mission when he first stood up and said, "This is what I'm about." One of the things that he said in there is, "I'm here to bind up the brokenhearted." Some of you in this room are single-hearted. There isn't a heart running with you. But all of us in this room, at some point in time, are going to be brokenhearted. Life isn't going to turn out quite right. And there's going to be some very tough days. When Sherry and I were looking to launch Gateway, we knew it was going to be tough and the obstacles were going to be high. And I'm thankful God provided me with a wife that knows the look that I get in my eyes when God, or at least I feel like, has given a dream or a vision, and she just goes, "What next?" Just the other day, I came bounding down the stairs, and she knows what that means. She goes, "What's next?" I was like, "Well, I was thinking about what we could do for our next church plant." She goes, "We don't even have Nexus launched. We don't even have camps going." And you're already thinking, I was like, "Yeah, but isn't it great to dream? Isn't it great?" And she goes, "Sure." Sometimes I have to know to pull back and not quite give her all of it, you know. Not quite tell her everything, but just kind of hint at it. Thursday morning, or Friday, I guess it was Friday morning, I woke up 5:00 in the morning, not when I wanted to wake up after the event. And I started thinking about little Josiah. And man, the tears started coming down my face at 5:00 in the morning. And I thought about the number of months that we were told for us to have a child was going to be next to impossible. And the amount of money that we invested to have this little munchkin. And then 2 days after his birth, we bring him home. And the next 3 months was, you know what? Because he was screaming, not crying. He was in pain. And man, I lay awake at night having to deal with him. Sherry did too. And I look back to those first 3 months that were just outrageously horrible that I wish upon nobody. And I go back into those moments, and I will tell you that I did not feel like God was near at all. And I would cry out to him, "God, give us some sleep and sanity, help our child." And no prayer, it felt like, was being answered. And I go back to these verses that we read at the beginning to comfort one another's. What do you have to have? Some tough times. And it was through being childless and also having this whatever thing going on at the beginning that the doctors couldn't figure out that it's made me a better pastor. And it's made me a better person. Because when a couple comes to me and says, we're not sure if we'll ever get to have kids, I know that feeling. Now, God blessed us with Josiah, and I'm so grateful that I have an obedient child. Every day when I leave the house, I pat him on the head and say, make sure you terrorize your mother while I'm gone. And he always obeys, you know. I used to tell him, you know, be a good boy, obey mommy. I realized he's not going to do that. And so in order for him to be obedient, I just say, terrorize your mommy, you know. He doesn't understand that yet. I will quit that before too much longer because he's picking up on a lot of words, man. And I'll tease Sherry and I'll be like, hey, Josiah, terrorize mommy. And he's like, ah, you know, I'm like, okay. He's an obedient little kid. And I looked at Sherry and I said, I just love him so much, even when he's driving me crazy. Because I know how precious it is to have one when you're not quite sure if you can even have another. And I know that, and there he is. Right on cue, way to go, Josiah. I know what that's like. I know what it's like when parents say, he was screaming and oh my gosh, and I go, man, yeah. I may not have the same symptoms, but screaming, man, it doesn't matter what causes it, all right? It doesn't matter. And I look back at on all of that, and here's what I would tell you if you're single and you're struggling with being single, the consolation in it, and I realize sometimes it's not a consolation, is you will know how to comfort someone else that's going through it. When you go through rough times as a marriage, you will be able to comfort one another. And this is what Paul is trying to say in his word, in God's word to us. You will know how to comfort one another. And it is tough. And I can't tell you why. But you're going to meet somebody and you're going to go, this is the person I need to comfort. Now, don't give comfort and say, I know what you're going through if you don't, okay? No one likes that. You don't like that. But when you have, just ask for permission to speak into their life. Hey, can I share what I went through? Or, hey, can I share what Sherry and I went through? If they say yes, proceed on. If they say not really, then that's not the time, okay? They're not ready. They just want you to listen. We're closing with this. This is our GPS for this morning, our good practical stuff. Disappointments and a broken heart make you the perfect candidate to heal others. What God is doing through you, through your life, and through the tough times, is He's making you into the physician, and to the person that will speak words of healing to someone else in a moment of brokenheartedness. And it is tough when you're going through it. And some of you will go through much more difficult times than what I will ever go through. And you'll experience deep loss. And just know God will not waste that pain. And I wish I could say, it's going to be all right. I don't know that it's going to be all right to say it'll be erased. But the healing you will feel in your own soul when you help someone else who's experiencing brokenheartedness will help heal a part of your own soul. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning. Lord, I just pray for those in this room who are single and struggle with it. Lord, just forgive those of us who sometimes make comments and we didn't realize it was hurtful. Lord, just help us to realize there's nobody in this room that needs another person just to be whole. Father, forgive us when, as churches, we've so elevated marriages to sell this thing as being the ultimate thing that you can do. Because, Father, the ultimate thing we can do is to be someone who follows after you, regardless, married, single. And, Father, even for those who are divorced, I know that sometimes there's this pain of failure, or what could God do with me, or a second-class citizen in a church. And so, Father, I just pray right now that at Gateway that we would not be that church that makes people feel like they're second rate, but that they would realize that there is extreme value within them, that past mistakes don't equal our future, and they certainly don't indicate where we are presently. And so, God, I pray that you will speak to their hearts and help them to understand that what's in the past is in the past, and you want to use them now to their full potential. And so, God, there's other people in this room who are brokenhearted, and it doesn't have anything to do with the single issue or the marriage issue, and they are brokenhearted. And, Lord, I don't know how to say to them, and can't say to them, it's going to be okay, because at this point in time, it sure doesn't feel okay. But Lord, I just pray right now you would bring people around them who will bring healing to their hearts. And Father, that when they come across others who are going through something similar that either they're going through or have been through, that they would be that physician to speak words of healing, to be that shoulder to cry on, that ear to talk to. And so, God, we just give you these next few moments just to heal our hearts and help us to be that healing agent in others' lives. In Jesus' name, amen.